Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Live from the Ed Morse Sawgrass Cadillac Studios, Morse has more. Visit EdMorseSawgrass.com. This is the Alex Dono Show on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM, 96.5 FM HD2, and online at WQAM.com.
Yes!
Oh, it is.
It is.
The Alex Dono Show here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM. With you till 10 o'clock tonight, streaming all over the internet, WQAM.com, or tune in radio app, radio.com app on your mobile device, your smartphone. Thanks for tuning in this evening. If you want to get in via the phone lines, 305-567-0560, 954-567-0560. You can always get at us via the plumbers911.com text line at 56022. And who would have thought the NBA would be this interesting this time of year, right? Before training camp start, before preseason starts. Who would have thought you would have really some of the top headlines in a week where Floyd Mayweather is 4 days away from facing Conor McGregor, John Jones pops positive for PEDs, allegedly, again, yet the NBA stealing a lot of these headlines. Now, just from my own local interest, I'll be honest with you, and tell me if I'm not the only one here. I think it's more compelling to me, this Dwayne Wade buyout saga. I think that's more compelling to me than the blockbuster trade that the Cavaliers pulled off with the Celtics last night. Like, I know that's the bigger national story, but I don't know. Something about this just Dwayne Wade fiasco with this buyout possibility in Chicago. Like, I'm waiting for this to get resolved with bated breath. And listen, I know the one thing that I'm sure of is, you know, Dwayne Wade, like, his days in Chicago are numbered. They're going to reach an agreement. The last thing that I read today, courtesy of CBS Chicago, was Dwayne Wade wants $20 million from the Bulls to buy him out. You know, he's due if he plays and he fulfills the final year of his contract and they don't buy him out, he's due to make $23.8 million this year. So when Chicago buys him out, they're looking for a discount. Like, they're not going to buy him out for the full $23.8 million. They'd have to be insane to do that. Might as well just keep him. But Dwayne Wade wants 20 out of the $23.8 million. Chicago is saying, no way, Jose. Too rich for our blood. Not a chance. So, okay, it's a negotiation. He's going to make a counteroffer. The Bulls will counter his counteroffer. And eventually, Dwayne Wade is going to get bought out. But then the $23.8 million question is, where does he end up after that, right? Does he end up on, you know, like a Houston or an Oklahoma City? Does he chase a ring somewhere out west? Does he come back to Miami to fulfill the storybook conclusion to his career, pretend like last year never happened? Or does he do what the Wine and Gold podcast at Cleveland.com, what they suggest he's going to do? And that is call up banana boat buddy, bosom buddy, slumber party buddy, LeBron James, best of friends. Does Dwayne Wade join LeBron in Cleveland? Man, just as a Heat fan, as a Heat lifer, as a Dwayne Wade fan, despite him not wearing the uniform last year, it would hurt me. Like, it would hurt me in just indescribable ways if Dwayne Wade puts on the Cavaliers uniform. Like, that would hurt me. And it looks like it's trending in that direction. But here's the latest on Dwayne Wade's situation in Chicago, right? Because this is getting ugly, and this is more evidence that they're going to have to find a way to buy this dude out, right? Like Dwayne Wade cannot be long for that Bulls roster. There's going to be a mutiny in Chicago if Dwayne Wade is on that roster for, I don't know, beyond the month of November. Like, you have to move him as quickly as you possibly can. Here's some insight from Nick Friedel from ESPN, Chicago Bulls reporter, saying, quote, the young players on the Bulls really can't stand Dwayne Wade. Wow. It's no secret in Chicago. They've all had enough. This is inevitable. It's coming. It's just a matter of time. It's a matter of when, not if. But right now, guys, it's just kind of a staring contest. Everybody's looking at each other saying, okay, how much money are you willing to give up? Right? How much money is Wade willing to give up from that $23.8 million? How much money is Chicago willing to pay him just to leave town and never come back? This is a divorce that is going to happen, Friedel says, but it may take some time, right? And people close to LeBron James, his wife potentially, his manager Maverick Carter, his agent Rich Paul, somebody in that inner circle is telling sources that they fully expect Dwayne Wade will join the Cleveland Cavaliers when he gets bought out in Chicago. I heard Ira Winderman raise an interesting point this morning when he was on with Joe Rose and Zach Krantz. And we've done this show before, right? I'm not doing 4 hours on this tonight because I'd rather play in traffic than do 4 hours on this, but we've done it before. Greatest all-time face of South Florida sports, Dan Marino or Dwayne Wade? And I've done the show before a year and a half ago when Dwayne was still a member of the Miami Heat. I've said Dwayne Wade is the guy. He's number one because he has the hardware. He has the rings. Dan Marino is number two because he doesn't. But Ira Winderman raised a pretty fair point this morning that if D. Wade ends up playing for the enemy, if he ends up joining LeBron, if he ends up joining the hated Cleveland Cavaliers, complete disregard for Heat fans and their sensibilities, if Dwayne Wade ends up joining Cleveland, for many a South Florida sports fan, that would automatically knock him a peg down on that list. And so for those of you who have come to the conclusion in recent years that Dwayne Wade has surpassed Marino as the face of South Florida sports, if Dwayne Wade goes to Cleveland, if that becomes the next chapter in his career, then Marino is back on top. You know, and I think the greater point that Ira was making today is that if Dwayne Wade goes to play for a third team to chase a ring, it's like, well, first of all, does he really have to chase rings at this point when he's won three of them? Like, I can understand, you know, I can understand Kevin Durant last year going to the Golden State Warriors to chase rings, hadn't won one yet. I can understand LeBron leaving Cleveland the first time to chase rings. I understood why Barkley was chasing rings. I understood why Gary Payton was chasing rings, but does Dwayne Wade really just need to flip teams every year to chase rings when the guy's got three rings in a Heat uniform? Like, it seems like he should be at a different point in his life. Like, his sensibilities, his priorities should be in a different place by now than chasing rings. But yeah, I think it does damage his brand. It does taint his brand if he jumps to a third team to try and chase rings. I think the thing that would make the most sense for him, and there are a lot of conditions here, as a Heat fan, I don't just automatically open up the checkbook and welcome Dwayne Wade back with open arms. I don't think Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra do that either, because basketball is a business. It was a business a year, you know, 14 months ago when Dwayne Wade went to Chicago. Riley wouldn't match the offer from Chicago because it was a business then. It's still a business now. You know, if Dwayne Wade does end up coming back to Miami, keep in mind his wallet is going to be fat from whatever settlement Chicago pays him in that buyout to leave town forever. But if he's not coming back for close to a veteran's minimum and coming back to play a bench role, because he's not going to be a starter in a Heat uniform, I don't believe. If he's not willing to take a diminished role and a diminished paycheck, Pat Riley is not willing to bring him back. I guarantee that. If it was about business for Riley 14 months ago when he said goodbye to Dwayne Wade, I don't think that changes. So have the last 14 months taught Dwayne that, you know what, my experience in Miami, the equity that I've built with that fan base and that community, the fact that I am beloved there still, maybe not if he goes to Cleveland, but at this point, he is still beloved in Miami. We're in Chicago. They couldn't care less about the guy. He should have realized that 14 months ago, and maybe it's worth taking a pay cut for that. Maybe he's realized that. Maybe it's worth taking a pay cut and a diminished role to play in a city where the fans love me and play for a franchise where I'm appreciated. And you know what? We read those comments from Nick Friedel that the young Bulls players can't stand Dwayne Wade. Guys in Miami still love him. Udonis Haslam loves Dwayne Wade. Hassan Whiteside loves Wade. Even Deion Waiters loves Dwayne Wade, would love to play with him. These guys would welcome him with open arms when his Bulls teammates are willing to drive him to the airport in a heartbeat. And you have to wonder how things now change in Cleveland with the blockbuster deal that they made yesterday. I couldn't believe it, honestly. I could not believe the terms of that deal. Keep in mind how desperate Cleveland was, right? Like, knowing that their leverage was so diminished because Kyrie Irving wanted out of there so badly and had told them, I'm not showing up to training camp if you don't trade me. Their hands were tied. They had to make a deal. So I thought that their leverage would be in the toilet. I thought their leverage would be low enough where they would eventually start considering the Miami Heat's offer. Oh, Justice Winslow not looking so bad all of a sudden. Goran Dragic not looking so bad. Instead, they get Ante Zizic. I know that's the throwaway part of the deal. But they get Isaiah Thomas. They get Jay Crowder. And then most of all, here's the kicker. They get the first round pick, the one that belongs to the Brooklyn Nets. Well, it belongs to the Celtics by way of the Brooklyn Nets, which will probably be the top overall pick next year. That's what I couldn't believe. I could not believe that Boston was willing to part with that. I cannot believe that Danny Ainge was willing to not only give up the players he gave up. You know, Isaiah Thomas, he is definitely, the Cavs are receiving a downgrade from Kyrie Irving. Isaiah is 4 years older, doesn't play as much defense as Kyrie plays. No question that's a downgrade. But, I mean, for Boston, that was the centerpiece of their squad, beloved in that city. Jay Crowder also in the deal, who, you know, if you compare him to Justice Winslow, better rebounder, better player, so Heat fans don't even think about making that straight-up comparison. But that number one overall pick, that's huge for the Cavs. So the Cavaliers, they really win here. You know, honestly, I think in the short term, okay, Boston is getting the better player, and now they have a chance at a real big three with Kyrie Irving, Tatum, Hayward, who they just acquired. But the Cavaliers, I mean, if you're going to lose LeBron James next summer, and you were going to lose Kyrie Irving anyway at some point before the season started in a trade, to get a player like Isaiah Thomas and to get a future first overall, probably, lottery draft pick, I mean, that is an amazing job by a team that had very little leverage, right? It's very rare that you talk about a trade that two sides really win and make out very well. And I thought Cleveland and Boston both made out pretty well in this deal, and Cleveland probably won the deal in the long term. Probably the biggest loser here is Isaiah Thomas heading into a contract year, and now he takes a diminished role where he's got to play behind LeBron James, whereas Kyrie Irving now gets to be the man. He gets to be the number one scorer in Boston. Let's go to the phones. Let's talk to John in Deerfield. What's up, John?
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good, man. How are you?
Good. Hey, I actually wanted to talk about the Dolphins, but I've got a good football comparison here. Would you compare Dwayne Wade, the way he's leaving, if he comes back, similar to Jason Taylor leaving, going to the Redskins, then our hated Jets?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I would say that it's a little bit different, just to nitpick here, only in the sense that Dwayne Wade left for a very small difference in money, whereas Jason Taylor went to the Jets for a huge difference in money. So I understood that a little bit more. But if Dwayne Wade were to come back, I think he would be embraced. It would be a great moment. The tributes in the arena would be fantastic. I definitely think there is a comparison to make there, because both of those guys are two of the most important players in the history of their franchises. So, yeah, I can see that.
Actually, but my question here I wanted to ask you regarding the Dolphins. When do you think they're going to make the call to Brandon Albert to try to secure that offensive line?
Adam Gase says that they're not doing it, and it is a little bit strange. I wouldn't mind it, to be honest with you, and the Craig Urbick injury is what put me over the top there, because the Dolphins are about to start a left guard who was fixing farm equipment 2 years ago. That's what Jesse Davis was doing 2 years ago. He was fixing tractors, and now he's going to be a starting left guard. Like, you'd think they'd be a little bit more desperate than they are right now, but I'm told that they're not making that call to Brandon Albert.
I see, that doesn't make sense to me. I mean, they look like a team built to win right now, and if you don't have an offensive line, how is Cutler going to stay standing up?
Well, listen, the Dolphins, and we talked about this a lot yesterday, they really have faith in what they've got, right? You know, this is not, thankfully, it's not Dallas Thomas and Billy Turner walking through that door. they like the group of guards that they have there. And, you know, Craig Erpik is probably only going to miss one regular season week, and eventually you'll get Ted Larson back. But considering they've already spent $10 million to go get Jay Cutler in an emergency, and they've spent about $1 million to go get Ray Maualuga in an emergency, I think they're going to try and push through with the guards that they've got at the moment. And, you know, the Ray Maualuga thing, we're going to talk about that with Omar Kelly at 7:25 tonight. He's going to join us live from Philadelphia. I would have hoped that Ray would show up in better shape than he has. So he's not ready to practice yet, is Maualuga. I like the idea of this signing. Experienced linebacker, has history with your defensive coordinator, solid run stuffer, can be out there 25-30 snaps, but the fact that he shows up in the 260s when he needs to be in the 250s, you wonder what this guy's been doing for the last several months, right? Like if he had never retired, if he hadn't given up on his football career, if he was trying to make an NFL comeback, why do you blow up during the offseason? I would have understood if Jay Cutler blew up. He actually showed up in really good shape. Like if Jay Cutler was 10, 15 pounds heavy because he thought he was retired for the last 6 months, I could understand that. But for Ray Maualuga, I'm a little bit concerned that this guy, he needs to really lose 10 pounds before he can practice consistently. That doesn't make me feel great as a Dolphin fan. Bones Jones, PEDs, a texter writes. Oh, it is true. We'll talk about that throughout the evening, but we'll take your NBA calls. Kyrie, mega trade last night. Isaiah Thomas to Boston. Isaiah Thomas to Cleveland. Kyrie Irving to Boston. Do you want Dwayne Wade back in South Florida? Oh, my God. But you know what? One thing I can stay excited for with this mess around us, my friends, I can always be excited to watch Mayweather versus McGregor this Saturday night. I've got my table all set at the Quarterdeck Davy, the Quarterdeck Seafood Bar and Neighborhood Grill. This is the place to watch Mayweather versus McGregor. They have the pay-per-view. They have the mega fight this Saturday night, August 26th. You can watch Mayweather versus McGregor at the Fort Lauderdale location, the Davy location. That's where I will be, the Quarterdeck Davy. Stop by and say hello. You can also watch it at the Plantation location right by the BB&T Center. Fort Lauderdale, Davy, and Plantation. The following Quarterdeck locations will have Mayweather versus McGregor this Saturday night. And man, it's going to be a lot of fun. The high-def flat-screen TVs covering every wall. The drink specials are great at the Quarterdeck. If you go out there this Saturday, got to try one of the new craft cocktails. The Quarterdeck has a spirit master, and the spirit master has been concocting these amazing drinks for the last several months. The craft cocktails are great, and the Quarterdeck has 2-for-1 happy hour all day, every day. It never ends. The food is delicious at the Quarterdeck. They have world-class sushi at the Quarterdeck. I love the sushi. I love the oysters. I love the Maine lobster. I love the fresh fish. Such a great place to get seafood. I love the clam chowder. I love the buffalo shrimp. And hey, you're not a seafood guy. Oh, they got great chicken wings. They got great burgers. Build your own with tons of fresh toppings. The chicken ciabatta sandwich with tater tots on the side is so good. The baby back ribs, they're tender. Meat falls off the bone. Delicious. I may have one of everything at the Quarterdeck on Saturday night, but whatever you do, you want to save room for dessert because the key lime cheesecake, that is the perfect way to finish every meal. You want to find your location by visiting quarterdeckrestaurants.com because the Quarterdeck is where you come for the food and stay for the fun. At 6:45, we'll talk Miami Hurricanes with Matt Porter. Today, day one of the Malik Rozier era. His first practice is undisputed starting quarterback of the Miami Hurricanes. I thought there were some really good quotes, some really cool things said by Malik, by teammates, by coaches after practice. We'll break down some of that stuff with Matt Porter in about 15 minutes. We'll take some calls here in a moment. So I'm so baffled by the way that the LeBron James sheep continue to buy into this guy's narrative. You see that tweet that he sent out about Kyrie last night? Now, okay, just so we're all clear on this, LeBron is not a fan of Kyrie Irving. He's not a fan of the player who said a month and a half ago, I don't want to play with LeBron anymore. I don't want to be in Cleveland. You know, you got the real reports from LeBron's entourage relayed by Stephen A. Smith that LeBron was telling his inner circle that the next time I see Kyrie, I'm going to want to beat him up. But, you know, now that the trade is official, now that Kyrie is out of town, LeBron's all class. Okay. I'm not even sure what to make of this tweet. First of all, It's not like LeBron made an original video and really went out of his way. He quote tweeted somebody else's video. Now, a Cavaliers fan, I thought, made a pretty classy video here. They had a Kyrie Irving, a number two Cavs jersey, laid out on the concrete. It was looking like they were about to burn it, but that was the joke. They lay down the Kyrie Irving jersey and they say, this is what you do to Kyrie's jersey. And instead of setting it on fire, they place a piece of paper on the back, a nice note that says, thank you so much, with a little heart on the bottom. LeBron James retweets that picture with comments. So he steals somebody else's work, but leaves a nice little comment there. That's the only way to be to the kid. Special talent guy. Nothing but respect. And what a ride it was, our 3 years together. But hold on. I don't think if he was talking about Chris Paul, Dwayne Wade, Carmelo, I don't think LeBron would say that's the only way to be to the kid. A little condescending, don't you think? That's the only way to be to the kid. Like, LeBron is treating him like a child. LeBron is being condescending here. But that was his grand statement. His grand statement of farewell to Kyrie Irving was retweeting somebody else's video. That's the only way to be to the kid. Special talent and guy. Nothing but respect. And what a ride it was our 3 years together. And people are passing that around as if LeBron James just cured cancer or something. Like, oh, this is the most amazing thing anyone's ever done. LeBron sends out a nice message to Kyrie. Let's not go overboard with this one, guys. Little condescending and not a whole lot of effort went into it in reality. But that was the magnanimous gesture that LeBron left to Kyrie on his way out as he's now Boston bound. Let's talk to Greg in Homestead. What's up, Greg?
Hey, how you doing?
Good, man. How about you?
All right. I kind of disagree with you. I think that Pittman got the short end of this trade. You talk about the draft pick.
The pick from Brooklyn, yeah.
Right. You know, they had two picks prior to that, okay, when LeBron came over to Miami and how that turned out. So there's no guarantee that you're going to get a good player. So, and Isaiah, he has a contract here coming up, okay? And I think Cleveland is a mess right now. And LeBron's leaving.
Oh, yeah, I think LeBron's leaving. Obviously, Kyrie is now gone. But I think that's a great way to start a rebuild is to get a lottery pick that could be a first overall pick. So that's my big takeaway here, Greg, is Cleveland did an amazing job getting a great return on a deal when they had very little leverage because Kyrie wanted out. Like, I thought Cleveland would get desperate enough to accept the Miami Heat's offer. Instead, I thought they got a great deal in return.
I thought the Heat offer probably would have been better if I was Cleveland.
Well, yeah, but the Heat didn't have a draft pick to offer. So, yeah, so would you I would take Isaiah Thomas over Goran Dragic, and I would take Jay Crowder over Justice Winslow, plus you throw in the draft pick. I don't think the Heat offer was close.
All right. We'll see how it all pans out. Thank you.
No, I appreciate the call, man. Let's talk to here's our buddy Rick and Davey. What's up, Rick?
What's up, Alex? How you doing?
Good, man. How about you?
Good. On the way to the airport to pick up son number one. So it'll be nice. It's going to be nice having him home for a little bit.
There you go. See, is he going to be home long enough to catch a Dolphins game, or is this a quick trip?
No. He's coming at. He thought he was wanted to go into the Navy, and while he was in the, 12 weeks of training, he decided after 9 weeks it wasn't.
Well, I don't blame the guy, especially with the way things are going. You might have to go to North Korea or something. Keep him home, Rick. Keep him home as long as possible.
Actually, you don't want to know where he got a job. So I'll just let you think that, like I said, he's not going to be home for very long. He already got a job somewhere in Asia. Let's just go with that. But,
so, wait, hold on. Somewhere where?
In Asia.
Oh.
He got a job already, yeah.
South Korea?
No. China.
Oh. All right.
He's going to be teaching English.
Well, it's not bad. You could do worse.
Yeah. Nice starting salary, but I told him, in China they take a lot of taxes, so we'll see how far your good starting salary will go. But, Alex, I've been going back and forth on this trade. And at first, I thought Boston won in the short term and Cleveland won in the long term. But after listening to a lot of national radio today, I've heard that this guy's hip is still not right?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Isaiah Thomas, you're right. Like, he may not be the same, and he's about to be 30. Like, it's not like you're getting, you know, like Kyrie a couple of years ago had a lot of injury troubles, but you were talking about a 22-year-old with his whole life in front of him. You're talking about a 30-year-old Isaiah Thomas with a bum hip. You're right, that could be a problem.
And I've also heard that there's no way LeBron's going to play with an 18-year-old. So I've got a feeling that if they want to entice LeBron to stay, they might have to package that pick again. So we'll see.
And they can. There's nothing stopping them from doing that. It's not restricted. They can deal that pick if they want to, if they can.
Right. Second thing, Alex, is, you know, after spending two of the last 3 years a week in Chicago over the summer, I finally realized that Dwayne Wade really didn't come out winning at all.
No.
I found out that in Cook County, which is where Chicago is located, they pay 10.25% in sales tax.
Oh, my God.
10.25%. That's one of the highest, if not the highest, in the nation. So
jeez.
After you take all that into account, that $40 million, I think he might have been better off staying here with the Heat, you know, where you don't pay state income tax. And then lastly, Alex, I know we haven't beaten them in 8 straight years, but who was the last first-year starter, not necessarily a freshman, but who was the last first-year starting UMQB to win in Tallahassee, if you can look that up? And one thing I heard this morning on the Dan Patrick from
It had to have been, what's his name? Ja'Cory Harris, he was a first-year starter. Yeah, Ja'Cory Harris was a first-year starter when he beat Florida State.
Okay, so maybe not as far back as I thought. Okay.
And that was the last time Miami beat Florida State, so there you go.
And it was in Tallahassee.
It was, yeah.
Okay. And the other thing, Alex, is I heard Reese Davis on Dan Patrick today, and Patrick asked him, give me a couple of sneaky teams. And he said, well, if they could get their quarterback situation straightened out, he said the Gators and the Canes could be those sneaky teams. So there you go. At least we're getting some national respect. Have a good night, Alex.
Nice. I like it. And, you know, I've heard Paul Feinbaum say the same thing. Phil Steele, he said he was bullish on the Canes. And that was a couple of months ago. Phil Steele was on a radio station with Joe Rose two and a half months ago. That was long before you had the quarterback situation settled. And he said he could see Miami as a contender for the college football playoff without knowing who the quarterback was, because the front seven in his eyes is that good. The defensive front is that good where they're going to be creating short fields, and hopefully the defense, the linebackers, and the secondary are forcing enough turnovers that the offense will have an easy time putting points on the board. I'm cautiously optimistic. I am. I'm cautiously optimistic, especially knowing and hearing that Malik Rozier has improved his accuracy and he's being more careful with the football. That was the knock on that guy. The knock on him for the 2 years he spent behind Kaya was, you know, the limited time you would see him play in games, which wasn't a whole lot, and the time you would see him in practice, he was too much of a gunslinger. Right, not careful enough with the football, but he has cut down on a lot of that stuff. So the Rozier era has begun. We will break it down with Matt Porter. Matt Porter from the Palm Beach Post. He joins us next to talk some Canes right here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM.
My mind's telling me no. But my body's telling me yes.
Back here on the Alex Dono Show, Miami Sports Radio, 560 WQAM. We go out now to the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Toyota of Hollywood has moved 2 blocks south of their old location. Get there now. All right, so day one of the Malik Rozier era started today. I've got to get some authority on this from Matt Porter, because, Matt, admittedly, I do a four-hour show every day. I pronounce this young man's name 3 different times during every show just to cover all of my bases. But now that he's my starting quarterback, I need to know the proper way to say Malik's last name. How is it he likes it to be said?
It's Rozier.
Rozier.
Like closure, which is exactly what we got in this Miami quarterback battle this week.
Oh, man. So why have the last 3 years, why have so many people gotten this wrong? I think he should have set the record straight earlier.
I don't know. I mean, I've been among them. I've said Rozier a bunch, but that's just how it looks to me. I mean, maybe it's because, I don't know, I spoke a little French growing up. I really, I don't know. I don't. It looks to me like Rozier, but He has said that it's Malik Rozier. So Rozier it is. The Malik Rozier era has begun.
Yeah, now that he's the starting quarterback, I will say his name however he prefers it. And, okay, so what's the feedback so far? 24 plus hours since he was officially named starting quarterback. What's the reaction been like from teammates and coaches today?
Pretty standard. I mean, everything you'd expect, right? Like, teammates were very happy for him because he's a guy that's been in the program with them for several years. I mean, he was in the 2014, you know, class. So, you know, if he didn't redshirt, he'd be a senior this year. He's a redshirt junior. So he's been around. He's, you know, been a backup to Brad Kaya. He's, you know, he's waited his turn, and he was proved to be the steadiest hand in the four-man quarterback race when camp opened. And here he is now, the starter, taking over for Brad Kaya, who's a very good friend of his. He was saying that Kaya, you know, sent him some text messages and, you know, was very happy for him. He mentioned that old canes like Gino Toretta and even Edgerrin James, you know, sent him text messages, said, you know, to keep your head on straight, you know, we'll talk to you soon and that kind of thing. So David Njoku was sending some nice words as well. And obviously, Malik Rozier was telling us today, we talked to him for the first time this week, you know, since the decision came down. Rozier was telling us that, you know, he was very, very pleased to see that Evan Sheriffs was the first person to congratulate him, and saw that Nicozi Perry gave him a shout out on Instagram, you know, saying like, you know, I always believed in my big bro, you know, that kind of thing. So it's been all love from all corners for Malik Rozier, and I think he's just ready to get this thing started.
You know, and about this process that led to him becoming the starting quarterback, what do you think are the biggest things he's improved upon in his game, whether it be over the last couple of years or even since spring, right? Because in the spring, it didn't sound like he or Sheriffs did all that well. But what has Rozier really improved upon since that time?
Yeah, I think in the spring, you know, I think a lot of that was really just kind of the coaches and players realizing that Brad Kaya is not around anymore and that they're probably going to take a step back. I mean, if we're being truthful, they're probably going to take a step back in the quarterback spot as it relates to throwing accuracy, as it relates to, you know, I don't know, leadership under pressure. I mean, you still, you know, Brad Kaya took some shots for 3 years. And, you know, Brad Kaya, for all of his faults, you know, he certainly was not a mobile guy. I think every, you know, quarterback, aside from, I guess, maybe Evan Sheriffs can run a little bit better than Brad Kaya. But, you know, with Rozier, you're getting a big upgrade there in the speed department, in the mobility department. With, obviously, if Nicozi Perry won the race, you know, that's a huge upgrade. So Perry, you know, quite clearly isn't ready yet. So, you know, I think the coaches weren't super high on what Rozier was doing in the spring, and that kind of went for all the quarterbacks. But, you know, he's been pretty steady from all the feedback we've gotten from coaches and players and what little snippets we've been able to see of practice. Obviously, the scrimmage stats back that up. Had a pretty high completion percentage, around 64%, pretty high quarterback rating through 5 touchdowns to 1 pick. Again, these are controlled scrimmages. These are scrimmages where Rozier and Evan Sheriffs were, or Rozier, excuse me, I keep slipping.
I'm going to keep slipping probably until November, until I get that
yeah,
right
exactly.
consistently.
I mean, you know, hey, number 12, Rozier. But, you know, those guys, he and Sheriffs were going against the twos a lot, you know, the second string defense, which had some holes in it. And the young cats were going against the number one defense most of the time. So, you know, take the stats for what they are. But I think overall, the body of work, Rick was pretty satisfied with Rozier's stability. You know, he kind of came to work every day. He was clearly the most veteran of the guys. And I think the one thing you really need to see in games is his accuracy, his throwing accuracy. You know, he needs to be able to fit the ball into tight windows. And, you know, Mark Walton, for one, who's the junior running back with obviously a lot at stake here, you know, needs a good quarterback, you know, to have a successful season himself, you know, to kind of take some of the pressure off. And he was pretty positive about Malik Rozier. He was saying that he's a guy that has improved a lot in his ability to throw. So definitely interesting, you know, see if Rozier can make the right play under pressure. That's the one thing that kind of we haven't seen from him.
Matt Porter from the Palm Beach Post joins us here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM. And Matt, in getting a chance to speak to Rozier today, has it set in for him yet that he's now the quarterback of a storied program, quarterback U? Do you think he's really come to realize what that means yet?
Yeah, he recognizes it. I think, you know, there's always when this kind of stuff happens, you know, when a big, I mean, really this goes for all life events, right? When something happens, you know, you can intellectually realize it, you know, you can realize it and know it, but you kind of feel it as something different. And Rozier understands the history. I mean, he understands that he's taking over for a pretty good quarterback, you know, in Brad Kaya, who he's very complimentary of. When we asked him about this stuff, you know, I kind of asked him, you know, has it sunk in that, you know, you're taking over for Kaya, but also for, you know, there's a long line of quarterbacks. I didn't name them all, but, you know, we're talking about, you know, guys like Ken Dorsey. We're talking about going back, you know, Erickson, Walsh, Toretta, Testaverde, Kosar, Kelly, just these awesome names that built this program. You know, it's something that is known nationally and even worldwide as quarterback U. That was the rep for the U. You know, in the early days in the 80s, and they've always been known as that. He is in that lineage now, whether, you know, he knows it now or not. He said that, you know, he's been kind of focusing on practice and he's got class now to worry about. He's trying to stay very present, as you would kind of expect. But, you know, he said he hadn't even really talked to his mom yet. This, you know, decision came down yesterday, and we were talking to him, you know, this morning after practice. So he said today he's, you know, got a little bit of time off. He probably will, you know, sit and maybe reflect a little bit, you know, after, especially when he's got a crying mom on the phone. I'm sure, you know, that'll help cement things and just kind of what he's accomplished here. You know, obviously that's all well and good, but, you know, the reality is going to come soon. And even the form of Bethune-Cookman will be a little bit of a reality check for Rozier, because, you know, he's got that game, got to perform well there. Obviously it's an FCS opponent, but 2 weeks later, he's at Florida State. So that's going to be the biggest reality check of all. I don't think he's going to have too much time here to sit and reflect, but I think that's okay because, you know, the sense I get, he's pretty eager to get going.
So with Rozier the starter, Evan Sheriff's the backup, do you think Nikosi Perry will be able to redshirt this year? Is that a possibility?
Really good question. I've tried to hit that, you know, in my reporting from a few different angles. You know, Mark Richt early in his career, he had a couple quarterback system going. He had, you know, a guy who was more of a dual threat guy, and DJ Shockley at Georgia was a young underclassman as a freshman, you know, when he's a redshirt freshman, excuse me, in 2002. And he had David Green as a starter, who was more of a traditional dropback passer who Rick inherited when he took over that Georgia coaching job. They won the SEC with that system. And then by, you know, the time Shockley was an upperclassman, they won the SEC again when he was the guy. So he's done it before, you know, he's rolled a couple quarterbacks, you know, in games before. He did it with Matthew Stafford when Stafford was an underclassman. He had two other guys who, you know, were kind of okay, you know, maybe if you want to make the comparison, you know, maybe they're a little bit more like Rozier and Sheriffs, and, Perry was, you know, a little bit more like, you know, Stafford as far as the talent level goes. I don't know if, you know, exactly how high Nikosi Perry's ceiling is at this point, but we do know he's probably the most talented quarterback in the roster. So Rick has negotiated these things before, and, you know, I asked him, you know, when we talked to him yesterday when he was announcing the starting decision, you know, do you want to play two? He said he doesn't want to switch, you know, a guy plays a couple series and then another guy plays a couple series, but he's open to the possibility of playing multiple quarterbacks. I asked offense coordinator Thomas Brown today, who was on the Georgia teams with DJ Shockley, you know, about 10 years ago, was a Georgia running back, now Miami's OC and running backs coach. You know, how do you approach this? You know, do you think Rick, you know, wants to play a couple quarterbacks? And he kind of was a little bit, you know, maybe stiffer in his answers. I think he didn't want to speak for Rick. But I'm left with the impression that they would play multiple quarterbacks if Rozier is struggling. And I think, you know, Rick has said as much too. I mean, he said that, you know, he's not going to let a guy die on the vine is something that he said over the summer. He doesn't want a guy to just, you know, go down with the ship. He's going to yank his captains, I guess, to change his captains, to extend the analogy there. So I think if Rozier struggles, he's out of there, but I don't think Rick wants to play, you know, quarterback carousel the whole season. So I think I think bottom line is this, you know, Rozier's average. If he's better than average, then the job is probably his for the season and Perry redshirts. But I think if Perry keeps impressing in practices, if he shows an ability to get the offense, if he really kind of is, you know, lighting up Greentree, then I don't see how Rick doesn't make that decision, you know, because if Rozier is just kind of getting you by, and Perry could maybe win you games, you know, by a couple touchdowns if he's that good, if he really comes along, then I think it's a no-brainer. But we're going to have to see how that plays out.
Matt Porter from the Palm Beach Post with us here on WQAM. And Matt, I guess now that the quarterback job is settled, what do we look at next offensively? Do we worry about the depth at running back, tight end, offensive line? What do you think the next concern is?
Yeah, I think those are all concerns. Running back depth to me is a major concern. You want to make sure Mark Walton's healthy, and right now he's got the bruised hip. You know, he says he's fine. He's coming off of that. We spoke to him yesterday, but any kind of, you know, injury there would be a major concern, because Travis Homer has had his fumbling issues in the past, had a pretty good scrimmage last week from what we were told, but, you know, he's still a concern. He still hasn't done it yet. And then Treyon Gray hasn't shown, you know, that much comparatively, and Robert Burns was cleared for contact, we learned today. He's been cleared this week, which is obviously a good sign. The freshman, who looks the part but hasn't been able to stay on the field going back to his sophomore year of high school. So he's a question mark. Not a lot of depth there. And then a tight end, we've heard some good things about Michael Irvin, the second there, sophomore tight end who's, you know, been kind of needs to bring it every day. He's been kind of in that category. And, behind Chris Herndon, you need some depth there too. So Miami's got a lot of receivers, which makes me think that the offense is going to be okay. I was watching those guys, up close today in practice. They just happened to be where we were stationed, for the media viewing period. And there's just so much talent there. It's an upgrade, massive upgrade, I'd say, from, some of the receiving corps that Miami's had in the last few years. You know, guys like Mike Harley, I really think they're going to make an impact early, but you do need running backs and you do need tight end. And as you mentioned, the offensive line too, I think Miami's pretty pleased with the five that they have now, but an injury would throw an inexperienced guy in there, and you don't want that, especially when you're already starting a very talented true freshman, but a true freshman nonetheless in Devon Donaldson at right guard. So Miami's offense, I'd say overall, some depth concerns aside from quarterback. I think this is going to be a team that's going to be led by its defense, and nothing has changed my thinking this camp in that regard.
Well, great stuff here as always from Matt Porter. You want to follow this man on Twitter at Matty Ports and read his work in the Palm Beach Post and palmbeachpost.com. Matt, thank you so much, man. And I cannot wait. September 2nd is very quickly approaching now. We have the starting quarterback. Let's see if the wins start coming in. Thanks so much, dude.
10 days. Can't wait. See you later, Alex.
And I got to get used to Rozier. McCalling the kid Rozier for 3 years. Rozier. Can we get used to saying that? 7 o'clock hour. We'll talk Dolphins with Omar Kelly at 7:25 here on WQAM.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.